whenever we come to this season of the year, I like to talk about something that is relevant to those who are going on vacation. As we know, we have Yeshiva Week this week, and many people are traveling. So there was a shaila that I got this year from multiple families in our shul. I don't know why, but for some reason, many, many families in our community have decided that Panama is a great destination for vacation this year. It used to be Miami. I guess they got too crowded and too expensive, and now they've come up with a new idea. So there are many families who are traveling to Panama. So, sounds like a wonderful trip. Sounds like it's pretty safe and a wonderful place to be. However, many, many of the families that are going called with the same identical question, and that is as follows. I don't know exactly the setup. I'm not sure why this is the way it is, but apparently there's a lot of kosher options there in Panama, and it's a very comfortable place for people to vacation. And the hotel where many of them are going to stay, which is right near, I guess, the Frum establishment, wherever they're going to be for Shabbos, the problem with the hotel is that the rooms in the hotel begin on the 17th floor. So you have a lobby all the way downstairs. I don't know what's in between. I don't know if it's office buildings or a shopping center. Something is in between. And then all of the rooms... Stieblach, yeah. And then the rooms begin on the 17th floor and above, which is probably a beautiful view of whatever it is that you're looking at. But the question is, what do we do on Shabbos? To expect somebody to walk up 17 flights of stairs is a little bit of a difficult expectation. At the same time, maybe you should just not go there for Shabbos. So somebody reached out to me, and I thought it was an interesting question. Then the next thing I knew, a number of people reached out that they're all staying in the same hotel. I didn't want to tell the other, by the way, do you know you're really not getting a vacation because you're going with all of your neighbors here from the shul who are all going to be staying on the 17th floor together with you. So one of the people who called told me the following. He said, well, it's really not a problem. I'm really not asking a shaila. I'm just letting you know how this works. He told me that the hotel identifies who the Orthodox people are on Erev Shabbos, and you give them your room number, and I think they take a picture of you or something, and when they see you coming in, they right away press the button of your room, and that is the arrangement that many of the Frum people have made with the operators of this hotel. So he said, really, there's no question. So I'd like to break this down. I think it's an interesting shaila. I think it's very, very important to think about. So walking down 17 flights, I guess, is not as bad as walking up. I don't know exactly how they get down. I don't know. My assumption was they walk down. I don't know. I don't know. This was the arrangement they told me about. So why does it start on the 17th floor? Anybody know?
What?
Why does it start on the 17th floor?
Offices, shops.
Okay, in between. Okay, so this was the question. So I'd like to break it down a little bit, because it touches on many different issues that are not only relevant to this question, but are relevant to other questions as well. And this shocking conclusion that my father came to, which I was very surprised by. I thought the easy answer is go to a different hotel or don't go to Panama for vacation. But that was not what my father said. And koach dehetera adif, and I think it's important that we discuss it. So we begin with the whole prohibition of Amir Lenachri on Shabbos in general. Number one, the Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos, Nachri Shabalachabos. When you have a fire, when you have a house that's on fire, and of course, I always mention, whenever we're talking about this case, I always make sure to mention that it's describing a case which is totally impossible, which never happens. We're talking about a case where there is no danger lurking in the background at all. So it's somebody on a desert island who is not in danger of getting into any problem with this fire, and it's also not going to spread to any other house, and there are no other people there. This is obviously not the situation that we ever have today. When somebody, God forbid, has a fire, it is extremely dangerous, and it can spread very quickly to another person's home, and it can be dangerous to anybody who's walking by and anyone in the immediate vicinity, and of course, you need to make sure the fire is put out immediately. But this case that the Gemara is talking about is a situation where the fire is under control, and it's not going to spread anywhere else, and nobody's going to be in danger at all, if you can hypothetically think of such a case. So the Gemara says, and you have a Nachri that comes along. I said in a shir recently, I said the term Good Samaritan. I was talking about a strike, and I was in the context of that discussion, I said a Good Samaritan. I got an email from someone this week who said, do you know that the title Good Samaritan comes from the New Testament? Is that true?
Yeah, Shomer.
Okay, but is that a religious title? I thought Good Samaritan today is used as a just...
Yeah, it happens to be one of the Shomer.
Does that apostle the title Good Samaritan? I don't think so. When you're on the train and somebody has a heart attack, God forbid, and a good Samaritan goes over and does CPR and helps the person out and takes care of them, that's called a good Samaritan. And I think a Jew, an Orthodox practicing Jew, would call them a good Samaritan as well. Anyway, if that person who emailed me is listening, now your question has been answered by the members of the Shir. But the Gemara says here, if you have a Nachri, a good Samaritan who comes along, and he says, hey, there's a fire here, let me put it out. So the Gemara says, I'm not allowed to instruct him, kabei ve'al techabei. I'm not allowed to tell him, you know, there's a fire in my home, would you mind putting it out? And again, let's repeat, this is talking about a case where there is no danger to anyone's health or to anyone's life. All we're talking about is loss of money. Now, that's not a small issue. That's a very large issue, a very serious issue. And that is something that we need to think about, which reminds me, nothing to do with this case at all, but something interesting. I was in Eretz Yisrael last week with a group of 10 Rabbanim, and we go every January to learn together, and it's an amazing trip. And we meet a lot of great tzaddikim, a lot of great gedolim. We met some of the leading politicians in the new government. It was really a fascinating trip. But one of the people who we met was somebody who you've probably never heard of. His name is Rav Micha Halevi. Anybody knows who he is? He's the chief rabbi of Petach Tikva. He is a phenomenal Talmud Chacham, and he is supposed to be the next chief rabbi of Israel. I think the chief rabbi of Israel is going to be renewed next year, and he is supposed to be the next one. So we felt it was just a good idea and a good opportunity to meet somebody who we may have to deal with in the next 10 years if he's going to become the chief rabbi. We often have a lot of discussion back and forth about Geirus and about different issues that come up here. So we thought it would be a good idea to get in on the ground, that we should get to know this this personality. Anyway, we had an amazing, amazing time meeting with him and having a conversation with him. And one of the shaylos that he started off with was, he's the chief rabbi in Petach Tikva. And he said there are two different sides of town. One side of town is extremely Haredi, and one side of town is very chiloni, and one side, I guess three sides of town, one side is Dati Lumi, and they all live together, and everyone's very happy, and they all get along, and surprisingly, they all, even the Haredim in town, eat from his Hashgacha, which is the Rabbanut of Petach Tikva, because they have a tremendous amount of respect for him, and for the kashrus apparatus that he has created there. It's something that is phenomenal, that he spoke to us about, and he described a really amazing person. So he told us a shaila, that in Haredi side of town, there were a number of cars that were broken into on Shabbos, on Friday night in the middle of the night. And the Haredim did not call the police because they said, okay, it's just money. What are we going to do? You know, we have no heter to call the police. No one's life is in danger. Somebody breaks into a car and steals it, so let it be. Filed an insurance claim. So it's a little bit of a headache, or a lot of a headache, to get the money back and to file the claim and to do everything that needs to be done. But they said, what can you do with Shabbos? So they didn't call the police. They allowed their cars to be stolen. They filed a complaint after Shabbos. They got the insurance money after the whatever they had to go through, whatever paperwork. And the shaila that they had was as follows. He said, although it's true that maybe they're correct that you don't have to call the police on Shabbos because after all it's just money, but in the end of the day, he said, there's a secondary concern here. There's a meta concern, and that concern is, if the Arabs are going to know that they have the ability to break into the community and steal cars on Friday night because no one's calling the police, they're going to probably take it to the next level as well, because they know people are afraid to call the police on Friday night. Well, let's see what else we can get away with. And instead of just breaking into a car, let's break into a house. And instead of just breaking into a house and stealing things, let's break into a house and, Rahman al-Litzlan, do things that are far more dangerous and maybe take someone's life. And therefore, he is of the opinion, he felt, that maybe this is something that is borderline pikuach nefesh. Not because stealing the car per se is a problem, but because of the unintended message that we're giving over to those who are stealing, that we don't care to call the police on Shabbos when a case comes up. And he said, sometimes you have to zoom out the lens and you have to think about what is going to be the consequence if you don't call the police. Maybe there won't be such a major consequence as far as your car is concerned, but there may be a larger perspective that we need to think about. And I think that was a very compelling argument. I think he's very correct. So here the Gemara says that if you have a Nachri Shabbala Chabbos, and of course, how could it be? Every Shabbos they steal cars and they never get caught?
They see the police never come.
Right? The police never come. It would be very strange that every time they steal a car in the last couple of weeks, nobody ever gets caught. That's a very unusual thing. Yeah. Of course, if they commit a crime on a different day of the week, police of course are after them. All of a sudden it comes Friday night, they're going to catch on to what's going on. And at some point, they're going to realize that Friday night is a hefker in this part of town. Anyway, very interesting shaila to think about. As I said, nothing at all to do with our discussion, but interesting nonetheless. So the Gemara here says, Nachri Shabbala Chabbos. If you have, you know, I told my students in Stern College last semester, I sometimes go on these tangents that have nothing to do with the shir. I said, look, You signed them in advance. Many of them said they listened to my shiurim online. I said, you know what you're signing up to. So if you don't like it, go to another shiur. Go to another class. It's okay. And Emily came anyway. I don't know if she's coming back this semester. We'll see. But so the Mishnah says, if you have a nachrisha balachabos, if he sees a flaming, raging fire, and he wants to put it out on his own, we are not allowed to instruct him to put it out, not to put it out. We should just let things be the way they are. From here, the Gemara says, you see that there's a prohibition of Amira la'akum. It means that you're not allowed to instruct him. What do you mean? But I'm going to lose my house. How can I not instruct a non-Jew to put the fire out? The answer is, too bad. It's just money. You have to lose your house. You have to be willing to do that in order that you should not violate the Isser of Amira la'nachri. Now, the Gemara clearly says, Amira la'nachri is only an Isser midirabanan. This is a rabbinic prohibition. It is not an Isser da'araisa. What's interesting is, the Gemara says in Bab Metzia, and this is far less well known, that the Gemara extends this to other areas of halacha as well. The Gemara says this is not only limited to Hilchos Shabbos. The Gemara says, for example, if I want to neuter a dog, if I want to neuter an animal, which is something that comes up all the time in our community, you are not allowed to do it on your own. That would be a biblical prohibition. To ask a non-Jew to do it on your behalf is also prohibited. You're not allowed to do that. Now, how do you get around the problem? You have to figure it out. You have to figure it out how to get around the problem. You would do the same way that we do in Mechiras Chametz. You would have to sell your dog to a non-Jew, and then you would have to have the non-Jew commission another non-Jew to go and do this surgery, to do the neutering. But for you to do it on your own, or for you to be involved in asking a non-Jew to do it for you, would be something that is not permissible at all. And again, that is part of the Gemara's discussion, that Amira la'nachri is not limited only to Hilchos Shabbos. It is something that has far-reaching consequences to other areas of halacha as well. Now, every time you have an Issur d'Rabbanan, you have to ask yourself, why did the Chachamim feel it was necessary to make this Takana d'Rabbanan? And here, there is a three-way discussion in the Rishonim, even though there are only two Rishonim that discuss it. It is discussed in Rashi and the Rambam. So how do you have three opinions? Because Rashi himself writes two different things. So Rashi in one place says the reason why is because on Shabbos, we have to be careful in the way that we speak. V'dabra davra. The Navi says there are certain types of discussions and conversations we should have on Shabbos that are appropriate, other kinds of discussions on Shabbos that are considered to be inappropriate to Shabbos, and therefore we say, if you're going to be instructing a non-Jew to do malacha for you on Shabbos, that would be inappropriate discussion to be had on Shabbos. Rashi writes in another place in Maseches Shabbos that the reason why we don't allow Amira la'nachri is because Nasa Kishlucho. Once I instruct the non-Jew to do it for me, it's as if my hand is now extended. It's as if he is my proxy. He's standing in my place to do something that I'm not allowed to do, but now I have an extension of myself doing it, and that's why we are not allowed to ask a non-Jew. And finally, the Rambam says the reason why is because we're concerned. Shema Yizalzel, if you're going to have a non-Jew running around your house, vacuuming and turning on the washing machine and doing all kinds of things, in the end of the day, it's going to lead that I'm going to do it myself as well. And we all see that this happens. You look at people who have help in the house, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but you have to use the help in the house appropriately. If you have help in the house, and that help is going to be doing all kinds of malacha on Shabbos, ultimately, invariably, as the Rambam says, it's going to lead that I'm going to assist, I'm going to be involved, because I see the malacha happening all around me as well. I remember I was once in somebody's house. They had a helper, or a number of staff of helpers in the house, and one of them, the second the Shabbos meal was over, took the tablecloth off, sprayed whatever they had to spray on it, and threw it into the washing machine, and turned on the washing machine on Shabbos. All of those things are problematic, each one in their own right. And one Shabbos I was there, I remember seeing that the person themselves threw it into the washing machine and started turning the dial. Only then caught themselves like, oh wow, I'm not supposed to be doing this at Shabbos. And I'm wondering, how could that happen at Shabbos? The answer is because every Shabbos you see your cleaning help going and doing this, which is not permissible to do in your house and not permissible to have done in your house on Shabbos. And then ultimately, as the Rambam says, it leads a person to do it on their own as well. What is the difference? Which reason of Amira la'nachri we accept? And the answer is, it makes a difference whether this would be permissible on Erev Shabbos or not. Would I be allowed to instruct a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos that here are the rules, this is what I want you to do once Shabbos comes in? Of course, on Shabbos itself, I'm not going to talk to you about it because we're not supposed to have these conversations on Shabbos, but I make sure that everything is set up before Shabbos begins. The answer is that is still a problem. Why? Because like Rashi says, it's nasa kishlucho. It's as if the person becomes an extension of my hand. So it doesn't matter if I instructed them before Shabbos or on Shabbos itself. If the malacha is being done on Shabbos, it's as if I'm doing it as well. And similarly, if the Rambam says we're concerned that maybe I'm going to do malacha by seeing others doing it around me, that doesn't matter when you instruct the person to do it, as long as the malacha is being done on Shabbos, that would be a problem regardless. So, the misnomer number one about the case that I described in Panama is that people said, well, it's not a problem because we set up the whole system before Shabbos. Don't worry, we go to the hotel lobby before Shabbos begins, we give them our name, we give them our room number, they know exactly when we're going to be coming, they know where we need to get to, and we're not doing anything. When they see us, they just know instinctively how to react. And the answer is that doesn't save a person from Amir Lenachri, because you gave them the instructions before Shabbos to do Malacha on Shabbos itself, and that would bring you back to the original problem. What if an Andrew, what? What? Amira Lenachri means instructing. Amira means talking. Lenachri means to a non-Jew. So Amira Lenachri means instructing a non-Jew to do some kind of activity for me on Shabbos that I myself would not be allowed to do. I'm sorry. Thank you for picking that up. There is a very interesting comment of the Mishnah Brura who quotes from the Chavos Yair. The Chavos Yair is a tshuva sefer written by Rav Yair Bachrach, who was one of the great Gedolim in the 1600s. And he says, he draws a parallel from a very unlikely source, from Hilchos Gittin, where he says, perhaps if I do Amira de Amira, if I instruct one non-Jew to then instruct another non-Jew who's going to instruct someone else, if it's very far removed from my original instruction, maybe there would not be a problem at all. That is a chiddush that he has based on, again, a halacha in Hilchos Gittin that has nothing at all to do with Hilchos Shabbos, but he makes some kind of parallel between the two. The Mishnah Brura does quote this, and he writes that it is a tremendous, enormous chiddush. It is not something that we should rely upon unless, he says, you have a major hefsid meruba. Unless you have a major loss of money, then the Mishnah Brura says we have a right to rely on this opinion of the Chavos Yair. Or he gives other conditions when we would be allowed to rely on this Chavos Yair, but generally we say that that should not be relied upon. So here, just because you go to the manager of the hotel and you say, listen, I'm staying in room 1752, and when I come in, I want somebody, so I'm not instructing directly to the person who's going to be manning the elevator. I'm giving someone the instructions who's going to give it to someone else who's going to give it to another person. That too would not be something we should rely upon, because Amira da Amira in general is not something that we try to rely on unless there is a major Hefsin Meruba. Now, this is not a Hefsin Meruba. You can think about it before Shabbos and not go to that hotel or not visit Panama over a Shabbos when you're going to be faced with this issue. So that is with regard to Amir La'akum. Are there ever times when Amir La'akum, although it is a prohibition on Shabbos, are there ever times where I would be allowed to ask and instruct a non-Jew to do something for me? First and foremost, the most obvious case where it would be permissible is if you have a situation of Pikuach Nefesh. And it goes without saying, I don't have to rely on a non-Jew. Shulchan Aruch says, a Jew himself would be allowed to do anything, any activity, to help save a life. Not only to vaday save a life, not only if I know that I'm definitely going to be able to, but even if I think there's a remote possibility that I can save a life, I would be allowed to do that as well. And I would be allowed to violate any Isser in the Torah that is learned from the Pasuk of Chai Bahem, that the most important quality, the most important thing that we always need to consider is life itself. And therefore, that would be something that overrides Shabbos, it overrides everything. And we would say that not only am I allowed to instruct a non-Jew to be involved in Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos in saving a life, but also a Jew would be allowed to do the same. What if we're talking about a situation where it is not Pikuach Nefesh, where it is not a life-threatening issue that we are confronted with, but rather what we're dealing with is a chole she'ein bo sakana. I have somebody who got hurt. Their life is not in danger, but they have a problem. They're not well. How do you define a chole she'ein bo sakana? So the Shulchan Aruch says, somebody who is mutal lemishkav, which means somebody who is not well. Mutal lemishkav means they're bedridden. Because of this symptom that they're experiencing, they are now bedridden and they are not functioning in the normal way that they otherwise would have. Would I be allowed to violate Shabbos? Would a Jew be allowed to violate Shabbos to help that person out? The answer is no. However, the Shulchan Aruch says, I would be allowed to violate Amira Lenachri in order to help out that situation. So for example, if somebody has the flu, and obviously when somebody has the flu, they're not just a little bit uncomfortable. Usually they are in bed, they're not functioning to the normal capacity that they otherwise would, and they need some kind of medication. Now, flu medication doesn't always work, and sometimes the Tylenol or the Advil is not going to kick in, but let's say we look around the house and we don't have anything, and I need some kind of relief because I'm really not feeling well at all. I'm allowed to send a non-Jew to go to the drugstore to pick up the medication that I need and to bring it back. Even though that's going to mean the non-Jew is going to turn on his car, he's going to drive down the street, he's going to go into the store, he's going to pay for the medication, and all of those melachos are things that I would not be allowed to do myself, but since I am a chole she'ein bo sakana, again, my life is not in danger, I'm not going to die from the flu just sitting here in my house and waiting for the medication Matzah Shabbos, but rather, okay, someone online is going to send me an email, yes, people die every year from the flu, I got it, I understand, not the point. My point is, yes, the flu is very dangerous, you always have to be careful. The flu is very dangerous, and of course we need to treat it, but if you have a person whose life is not in danger, but they are bedridden and they're not feeling well and they need some kind of relief, we would be allowed to ask a non-Jew to violate even a melacha d'oraisa for that purpose. Now, the Shulchan Aruch does say that an interesting case would be hakol cholim eitzel tzina. If it's freezing in the house and there's no heat on, we forgot to turn the heat on, or in the days of the Gemara, in the days of the Shulchan Aruch, they didn't have heaters, they just had wood, and for whatever reason, the wood chips that were burning and keeping everyone warm are now out, and we're going to be very cold the rest of the Shabbos, that would be something that we are all considered cholim when it comes to being cold. Even though I can manage the rest of Shabbos, I'm not going to die. Everybody always says, you know, if you go outside without a coat, you're going to catch a cold. That's the way I was raised, but I was told as I've matured that that's not the case. You don't get a cold from being cold outside. But either way, it's something that makes people very uncomfortable. The Shulchan Aruch says, Hakol cholim eitzel tzina. We are all considered to be a chole she'ein bo sakana if the conditions in the house are very cold. And therefore, as a result of that, we would be allowed to ask a non-Jew even to do a malacha d'oraisa, which means even to turn on the heat, even to light the wood in the house in order to keep all of us warm. So many, many examples. And of course, we don't have enough time to go into all the particular examples. But what I want to get to is this case. The Gemara says in Maseches Gittin, what if a person is negotiating to buy a property of land in Eretz Yisrael? Hakona Sada Besuria, the Gemara says, I'm trying to buy up the land from the Arabs, and I want to be able to now inhabit the land by a Jewish family. So that is considered to be a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. That's a very important mitzvah. So the Gemara says, I would be allowed, of course, if he comes to me with a contract on Shabbos, I'm not allowed to sign a contract on Shabbos. That would be a melacha d'oraisa. That would be a biblical prohibition for me to do that on Shabbos. But would I be allowed to instruct a non-Jew to sign the contract on my behalf? Right? Let's say finally we come to the terms and conditions. Now it's Friday night or Shabbos morning. The non-Jew shows up to my house and says, here, I have the contract ready to be signed. Would I be allowed to instruct a non-Jew to sign it on my behalf? Says the Gemara, yes. Yes, I'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to sign this contract on my behalf. The problem is the Rishonim say, it seems from there that for the sake of a mitzvah, I'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew even to violate an Isser D'Oraisa. Even to sign a piece of paper, which is a malacha of kosev on Shabbos. You're not allowed to write on Shabbos. So how am I allowed to ask a non-Jew to write? The answer is, for the sake of buying a piece of property in Eretz Yisrael, I'm allowed to ask a non-Jew to violate an Isser D'Oraisa. You contrast that with the Gemara Maseches Erevin, where the Gemara seems to say, Hahu yinuka d'ishtape chamime. The Gemara talks about a young child who is having a bris milah, and we were afraid that he's not going to be healthy, and we need someone to heat up the water. So the Gemara says the only thing we're allowed to do is ask a non-Jew to go get water from somebody else and walk across the street without an Erev, to get the hot water that we need, and to walk across the street without an Erev. It seems from that Gemara that only a Malacha D'Rabbanan would be allowed with Amir La'akam. So this is a major discussion, and the Rishonim all debate, how do we deal with it? Some Rishonim say the answer is, what do you mean? Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Buying a property in Eretz Yisrael is considered to be on such a high level, it's in a category in and of itself, it's in its own league, and therefore you would say you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do anything. Even a malacha d'oraisa, to buy a piece of property in Eretz Yisrael, would be permissible. Whereas other mitzvos are on a different level, and we would not allow that level of violation of Shabbos in order to fulfill a different mitzvah, even a very important mitzvah like bris milah. So this is a big discussion in the Rishonim, and it's a big discussion in the Shulchan Aruch as well. The Shulchan Aruch comes to the conclusion as follows, and he says, for the sake of performing a mitzvah, the only time that we would allow a person to violate Amir L'Nachri on Shabbos is when you have a situation which presents itself as a Shvus D'Shvus, which means you have two rabbinic prohibitions that you're confronted with. So how do you get two rabbinic prohibitions? The first thing would be, if you have Amir L'Nachri, instructing the non-Jew in the first place is only a rabbinic prohibition. The second rabbinic prohibition is, if I'm only instructing the non-Jew to do something which is rabbinically prohibited. That is the only time that for the sake of a mitzvah, I would be allowed to ask a non-Jew to do something for me. But say, for example, I'm asking a non-Jew to do something which requires him, the non-Jew himself, to go violate what would be for me an Isser D'Oraisa, a Malacha D'Oraisa on Shabbos, that would not be permissible. So give this example. If I had to do a Bris Milah, and the medical opinion of the time is that in order to do the Bris Milah, I need hot water in order to wash off the baby afterward. Now, of course, if I did the Bris and now the child is in danger, I heat up the hot water myself. But if you're about to do a Bris Milah, then you realize, oh, we don't have the hot water, what are we going to do? I would not be allowed to ask a non-Jew to heat up water in order to enable us to do the Bris Milah. I would say the Milah is going to have to wait till tomorrow. So that's the general rule. That's the general principle. And that brings us, what?
This itself, you know, shouldn't be allowed.
Right. You're correct.
So why, if you have to do an extra step to do the Bris, the extra step isn't allowed.
That's... Right. So that's a very interesting question. So the Gemara actually asked that. The Gemara talks about a case. Let's say I have a, I'm missing the Izemel Shal Mila. The Gemara says, you ever heard of the Perek Reb Elazar de Mila? There's a Perek in Maseches Shabbos called Reb Elazar de Mila. Why is it called Reb Elazar de Mohel? Why is it all about Reb Elazar? The answer is, Reb Elazar became very famous. He was one of the great Tanaim. And he said, like you're saying, he said, not only does the Torah say you're allowed to do a Bris Mila on Shabbos, if the Torah says I'm allowed to do a Bris Mila on Shabbos, it means I'm allowed to do everything that's necessary to have a Bris Mila performed on Shabbos. And therefore, I would even be allowed to make a knife on Shabbos. I would be allowed to do anything in order to facilitate the mitzvah Bris Mila. And the prevailing opinion in the Gemara is not like Reb Elazar. We pass in the Shulchan Aruch like the other opinion, which is the only thing that's allowed on Shabbos is the actual act of Bris Mila. But all of the preparatory stages that are necessary to get you to that, that could have been done before Shabbos, need to be done before Shabbos. And if a person, for whatever reason, was not able to create a knife before Shabbos began, then okay, the Bris Mila is going to have to wait till tomorrow, even though it's counterintuitive. If the Torah says the Bris Mila is allowed, then why aren't the preparatory stages allowed to do that as well? Good question. It's a very good question. But that is really the subject of a major discussion in the Tanaim that the Gemara does talk about. So, say for example, let's say the Shulchan Aruch talks about the Erev falls down on Shabbos, and we have a whole community. I'm not going to be able to knock on everyone's doors and say, by the way, the Erev is down. There's 10 different shuls. I can't get the word out quickly enough. I know people are going to be outside carrying on Shabbos. What should I do? So the best thing to do, the Mishnah Berurah says, is to have a non-Jew go and fix it on Shabbos. Oh, what do you mean? But the non-Jew is doing a Malacha D'Oraisa. The non-Jew is tying up the knots and he's doing... The answer is no. That's for a mitzvah derabim. For a mitzvah derabim, that is also in a category of its own. When you're doing it for the sake of the public and it's going to save them from being Mechal Shabbos, then that would be permissible. So again, a little bit of a complicated story here, and this is something that the Shulchan Aruch talks about in great detail of when Amir Lenachri is mutter and when perhaps it is not. Getting to our case here, my father felt in this situation, if a family wants to go on a vacation to Panama, so I would have said, don't go to Panama and stay on the 17th floor if you know that this is going to involve you doing something wrong. My father said, no. We don't expect a person to cancel their plans. If they want to go to Panama as a family and they feel that this is a comfortable place for the family to vacation, and the only obstacle in the way is that they're going to have to figure out how they're going to get up to the 17th floor on Shabbos, the answer is that would be considered a shvus de shvus b'makom mitzvah. That would be a double derabanan for the sake of a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is number one, onig Shabbos. They want to be able to enjoy themselves, to go to the room, to be able to eat downstairs, to go to shul, and to be able to daven. All of that is considered to be onig Shabbos. All that is considered to be the mitzvah of observing Shabbos properly the way they want it to be observed. Aye! You're going to have somebody who's going to do a malacha for you. Let's think about it. Which malacha is he going to do? What are you asking the non-Jew to do for you?
Push the button.
So what's involved in pushing the button? Is that a malacha d'oraisa or is that only a malacha midrabanan? What is that? So the whole discussion of electricity on Shabbos is a very, very lengthy discussion over the last 150 years. And this is a big debate. Do we assume that using electricity on Shabbos is a malacha d'oraisa or is it only considered to be a malacha d'rabanan? Many gedolim over the last 150 years have had a lot to say about it. The Chazon Ish was of the opinion that it's a malacha d'oraisa, it's bona, it's soser, whatever it is. He says, when you open a circuit, when you close a circuit, that's considered building, it's considered taking apart. Rav Asher Weiss writes a very interesting chiddush in his tshuva where he says it's makabe patish. Everyone has their own idea about what this is, but there were many who were of the opinion that using electricity on Shabbos is only an isur d'rabbanan. To use electricity on Shabbos is only an isur d'rabbanan, and therefore, based on that, to instruct a non-Jew to do an Issa D'Rabbanan for me is not permissible. But when it's for the sake of a mitzvah, when it's in order that I should be able to have a Shabbos with my family and be able to go to shul and be able to eat the Shabbos meals and be able to have Oneg Shabbos as we generally experience it, that would be something that potentially would be permissible, and my father was comfortable being makel on that. So I told this to the number of families who had asked me. One of them called me back, who had not asked, and said, is that true that your father said that? I said, yes. He says, you have to call my children and tell them, because my children don't want to come with us on vacation because they don't believe it's true. I said, okay, it's fine. But this is something, again, I was surprised as well that my father was makel, but this is something that he was comfortable being makel about. And I was reminded a number of years ago, the OU had a discussion. They wanted to have an OU convention. And this is something that comes up by many conventions. You have to figure out, what do you do about the card key on Shabbos? The card key to get into your hotel room. So problem number one is the fact that the card key itself is muktzah, because there is no other purpose for the key other than to open an electronic door on Shabbos. So to carry it around with you is already a problem of muktzah. To then hand it over to the non-Jew who's going to be standing on each floor is a problem. To instruct a non-Jew, right, there are many kosher programs who put a non-Jew on each floor, and then they go to your room and they open it up for you. To give my key to the non-Jew would be a problem of muktzah. To have the non-Jew with the master key stand there and open up my door would be a problem of Amir Lanachri. I'm instructing him to do a malacha on Shabbos. So how am I allowed to do it? So are you going to say that from now on we're not allowed to have Pesach programs and we're not allowed to go away for a Shabbaton and no one's allowed to do anything and we have to keep all of our doors open and allow everyone to come in and steal the jewelry that's in the room? Is that really the expectation that is had? Now, if it were up to me, I would say, maybe. We'll be fine without Pesach programs. Everyone will survive. And without a Shabbaton, we'll all be okay. The answer is, I'm not sure we'll be okay. Look around our community. Are we really going to be okay? I'm kidding. But the answer at the time that the OU said, my father was very much behind this decision, was, yes, there is some kind of mitzvah to Rabbim. There is some kind of mitzvah when, again, it's not a mitzvah to make a Shabbaton. It's not what it means. But it means if we want to have this experience and we all want to go away together, and we want to spend the Shabbos listening to Shiurim, and we want to spend the Shabbos all celebrating Shabbos together, or celebrating this organization, or doing whatever it is that brings us together as a family, or as a community, or as a culture, or as a society, whatever it may be. And the only way to do that is by setting up a system where you're going to have a Nachri who's going to do this. Let's break it down. Let's ask ourselves, how bad is it? After all, it's a shvus to shvus b'makom mitzvah. It's a double derabanan, because the first issur derabanan is only instructing the non-Jew, which is not a biblical prohibition. What am I asking the non-Jew to do? At worst, I'm asking him to do an issur derabanan. Okay, so if it's a shvus to shvus b'makom mitzvah, this is something that would be permissible. Now, don't mistakenly take this and say, well, if I live in Manhattan, this was a very famous question. If I live in Manhattan on the 26th floor, and I'm going to have a doorman or an elevator operator, thank you, who's going to be standing in the lobby, and every time I walk into the building, they know to press my floor, so would that be okay? And the answer to that is, I think, my father quotes from Rav Moshe Feinstein, and Rav Soloveitchik said the same thing, that you're not allowed to live on such a floor. If you know that every Shabbos you're going to have to rely on this heter of Shavuos Shavuos Makom Mitzvah, we would not allow you to. This is, as my father likes to say, this is an emergency heter. When you need it, it's a makom mitzvah, and you have no other choice. So, okay. So then we say, shvus l'shvus makom mitzvah is permissible. Now, I would have said, if you need it, and there's no other choice, and there's no other way around it, don't go to Panama. That's what I would have said. But again, I think my father saw it otherwise, and he said, no, the family has a right to go on a vacation. The family does not have a right to go live on the 24th floor of an apartment building, and every single Shabbos knowingly is going to have to rely on the Seter. That is not permissible. But to say that as a one-time thing, we would allow somebody to go and have this Amir Lenachri performed on their behalf when all the Nachri is being asked to do is an Issa D'Rabbanan, that would be something that my father was comfortable saying is permissible. Yeah.